Vancouver podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our 39th comic podcast. This is Marty,
Florence,
Mike,
and Jason,
and Susie.
And together we are
Read Comics.
.org.
So I'm going to let the listener in on the fact that in my bathroom there is grouting going on, and so there may be some weird noises and or somebody giving me instructions on how long they'll be before I can shower again.
We will take it totally in a sexual context.
It's not related to the podcast, but it's going on around it.
It will totally be interpreted in a sexual way, if possible.
Yeah, because grouting.
Yeah.
That's sexy.
That's very hot.
Noises coming from the bathroom, giving you instructions.
Grouting is only like one or two letters from grunting.
Yes.
So this is one of our book club episodes.
Yes, we actually have focus.
Oh.
Everyone, turn off your ringers.
This is just a friendly reminder.
I gotta take this one.
Now's a good time to turn off your cell phone.
So, this week we are talking about the comic Echo by Terry Moore. And it's only been around for 14 issues so far. Some of us have read all 14. Some of us have read...
Actually, none of us have read all 14.
Okay.
Oh, Susie has. We're missing episode 10. And we didn't even know it until we started loaning them out. And people were like, why don't you have episode number 10?
Issue number 10?
Yes.
Yeah, well, this is... Yes, issue number 10.
So we have it on order from the comic book shop, so we'll catch up hopefully next week. But in any case, we've read everything before and after it. And I think, Jason, how many have you read?
I am halfway through, a little bit more than halfway through number 8.
Okay.
I'm through all the comics that were allowed to me. I was denied number 10. So I chose to stop at 9. I could have read 11 through 14, but...
Well, then,
wait
a sec. Then you didn't read them all. Because 11 was allowed to
you. But you weren't giving me the whole story.
What, and you couldn't have found issue number 10 someplace? There are a lot of places you can find comics these days.
Yeah, well, I didn't find out about that until the other day. I didn't have enough time. They might have been denying me the gay episode. I don't know.
Censorship is strong in
where,
this household.
The only two males in the comic somehow
issue
meet.
Issue number 10 that I can't remember what happens in it. So, not a particular issue.
Speaking of men in the comics, Terry Moore likes to draw very pretty men.
Mm-hmm.
Very pretty men.
I had been planning to discuss how beautiful his women are. But
let's
I
talk.
Think he just is very good at drawing humans.
Yes.
That it's true. It's true.
I do like the art. It is very simple, very clean lines, which I like a lot, especially since it's in black and white. But yeah.
But it's more sophisticated, I think, than Strangers in Paradise was for most of its run. I mean, I think you really see a progression in him as an artist.
In Strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And you mean Strangers compared to this?
Right.
Not
I think,
Strangers from the beginning to the end, although I'm sure there's a progression there as well.
Right. I'd say the progression there, you know, definitely you can definitely see it over the years, and I think this is coming out of the gate looking much more sophisticated.
I felt like, you know, it certainly could have been inked. Like, it feels a little bit like, you know, why... What's the choice
what
here?
What would there be to
what
ink,
mean,
though?
Like, you mean color?
Or colored.
Okay.
I mean, colored.
I was like...
Well, he is self-published. I mean,
no.
And he does it all himself. So
right.
It could be just a logistical financial limitation.
Yeah, I'm sure it's financial.
Yeah.
And probably time just getting it released, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think every 5 weeks is probably as fast as he can do it. And if you added in the coloring,
it
would probably take a little longer.
Right, and he doesn't have to worry about someone else's deadlines or, you know, paying someone else. I mean...
Yeah, right. I mean, it really is him and his wife for the whole... It's the whole publishing company.
Right. But it is interesting that, I mean, how much is this comic?
$3.50.
Yeah,
for
I guess...
Black and white comic.
Right.
Oh, Walking Dead is
Yeah.
Well,
probably
Marvel comics go usually $3.99 or $4.99 for,
you know.
Yeah, it's not prohibitively expensive, at least not for me.
It's not. You know, you're talking about that he doesn't have to worry about, you know, working with other people's deadlines or stuff. And then we have Jeff Smith, who puts out Wrassle whenever he feels like it.
Yeah.
Maybe he's related to Kevin Smith.
No, it's funny because this actually started around the same time as Wrassle. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. And what's Wrassle up to? 4?
Something like that.
If that.
Five,
yeah.
5.
Well, yeah, I never read Bone in a single issue, so I don't know. Is this consistent for him, or is this maybe...
You know, I don't know. I don't know how long it took Bone to do its run.
Neither. I kind of discovered it towards the end and read it in trades.
Didn't Bone... I wonder if Bone and Strangers in Paradise started around the same time.
That's possible.
That would be kind
of
interesting.
They ended up with around the same number of... Well, no, that's not true. I was going to say they ended up with the same number of trades, but Strangers in Paradise had something like 20, and Bone only had around 9.
That doesn't sound like the same amount.
Well, that's why I said, no, I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I think for independent comic writers, artists, it's really... almost more important to be consistent because the potential for losing readers is a lot higher, I think.
Right. You don't have multiple titles to catch people if one drops off.
I mean, there's a few, I can think of a few independent comics where I picked up the first couple issues and it never saw it again and totally forgot about it.
Yeah.
Now I kind of wonder what happened to them.
Well, the other comic that I'm always comparing with Echo is Sword. Just because they both started at the same time, and for a while there, they both came out in the exact same week, and so, you know, every time we got one, we got the other. And one of the things that really makes me think of is the art, because I think the Luna brothers, I think their art's interesting, but they only have two faces, and that, you know, every comic, every title, every issue, it's like the same face on every woman or man. And I think that that is really a point of differentiation for Terry Moore. I think his women are always so distinctive, and his men as well.
Yeah, there's really, and not just their faces either. Like, you really get a sense of, you know, unique characters in this. And I thought...
breast sizes.
Yeah, like,
well,
breasts
like
are totally...
body types, just of everybody.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a model of a body type, which a lot of artists seem to do. You know, and just take a different head on, or as Luna Brothers don't even do that, but, but, you know, in Strangers in Paradise, part of it was, like, you could, so many of his characters had, like, little rolls of fat, which didn't make them look fat, they just looked like people.
Yes, and they actually gained and lost weight over time, depending on their circumstances and, you know, things going on around them. Yeah, like, you know, like anyone you know for 10 years, their bodies continue to change.
I remember specifically in Echo, the bikers, like,
yeah,
are so distinctive and such individual characters, and,
yeah,
you know.
It is true.
Well, I think it's all the more remarkable in black and white, because I think another, you know, easy fallback is just, like, the same woman, different color hair.
Yep.
So, what do we, obviously, Florence likes it, because she chose it. Marty, what is your general impressions of the comic?
I would give it, like, an 8.
Out of a billion? Or out of 8?
Out of 18. No, out of 10.
Oh.
I think, you know, it's... I think it's back to being really interesting and really good. I feel like it started so awesome that it was really hard for it to live up to itself for quite a few issues kind of toward, you know, I would say toward 9 and 10. And, you know, maybe I have a negative impression because we missed an episode and I didn't even know.
Number 10.
Maybe I just thought it was really disjointed, but I don't actually remember thinking that.
I don't know if I agree with your assessment that it started out so awesome. I mean, I did get hooked into it. But I don't know if I would have stuck with it just based on the first issue or two.
It's kind of the epitome of decompressed storytelling. In that it really reads a lot better
as
a
whole.
In a big chunk.
Yeah. You get to the end of an issue and you're like, oh, that's it? Kind of. It's almost like a Walking Dead comic, where it seems to just fly by, which is good. It's good storytelling, but it doesn't seem like you're getting a full issue's worth sometimes.
What were you going to say, Susie?
I was just saying, I remember when the first issue came out, you know, I bought it, obviously, because I really liked Terry Moore, and I read it, and I'm like, well, that's a good start, but it didn't make me feel like, okay, this is going to be great. You know, it's just like, well, that's a beginning, and then it took maybe through two more issues where I was like, okay, I like this. I really like this.
Yeah. I think maybe the start for me was a little cliched, you know, government experiment causes someone to get superpowers, and they must now find and destroy her.
You know, it's interesting because
it definitely feels like he's working in that genre.
Yeah,
for sure.
I mean, working in the genre is totally fine for me. It's what you do with the genre that makes it distinctive, and I think that's I caught more into that as the story went along.
Yeah,
but to me, it just started out pretty, you know, one note.
You know, it's interesting because I feel like the story was almost immaterial to how excited I was about it. Like, yeah, I really liked the premise, but I feel like, you know, I guess I shouldn't say immaterial. Like, that's not actually it at all. It was that it was working in that genre, but in such a higher caliber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it had way more, like, I had way more character investment in that first issue than I think I've ever had reading any X-Men comic ever.
Well, I don't know if I agree with the character investment, because they didn't really tell a lot about Julie, the main character.
It's true. We were more invested in the other character, the character that died,
yeah,
in that first issue.
Sure.
I don't think it was until issue 3 that I really became invested, and I just paged through it and reminded. That's where we met Pam, her sister. We got the heart-to-heart between the biker, bartender, and, oh, what's his name? Dylan, thank you.
I wanted to say the new David.
I wanted to say Rick from Walking Dead.
Actually, Rick, I think, is the name of her ex-husband.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and then that same issue, you also get the confrontation between her and Rick. And so you kind of see just how kind of damaged she is from their breakup.
All her different points of connection and
disconnection. Yeah. So you also kind of meet this weird villain guy at the end. But
I forgot all that happened in issue 3.
Yeah, so
that's
issue
crazy.
3, I think, is where it really started, the character started opening up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started becoming a lot more interested in it.
Well, I have to say, talking about decompressed storytelling, I think this is another area where it really benefited from direct comparison to Sword. Because we would get through an entire issue of Sword with, like, 3 grunts and half of a fight. And we'd be really excited about the amount
of
content
in
Echo.
It's like a rating system, 3.5 grunts.
And it's not that I hate Sword, but it really was so on the other end of the spectrum of being unsatisfying that this was seeming like a lot more content.
Yeah, I definitely never felt... I shouldn't say never. In those early issues, I definitely felt like we were getting a lot of bang for our buck. And then, like I said, it sort of felt like it slowed down and not a lot was happening for a bit. And then I think it's back to being...
I'm going to pick X-Men for my next book club just to torture
you. You know, and I'd be perfectly happy to read a good X-Men title
because I
really
There's
haven't ever.
Let's see. Have you ever read God Loves Man Kills?
No.
It's a classic one from the 80s. It's really good. But
I think the only one that I've really liked was... what's her name? It was part of House of M, I think. Like,
mm-hmm.
I read some of that. Yeah, I read some thing.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the House of M stuff that Susie loaned me.
Well, back to Echo. Diversion in the Marvel universe.
Well, should we reveal what the plot is?
I was just going to say, we probably haven't done much intro for listeners who have no idea what we're talking about.
All you have to know
Echo.
Is metal boobs. That's it.
That's all Marty has known. Hence, you kind of get a hint as to why he's raving about it so much. I think character investment has to do with the amount of cleavage issue.
When I say investment...
Anyway.
They're completely covered when you think about it.
Yeah.
They are. Yeah, no nipples.
It's more than fabric, really.
Yeah.
Although
and less
no,
Dan at the same time.
Yeah, it's true.
No more than how any other superhero
is
totally
on.
Yep.
Okay, so Florence, it's your pick. Why don't you do the synopsis? We'll punish you for it.
Yes, I'm the one who's read it the longest ago because it's all been on loan to other people for a while now. So we have a government experiment, as has been mentioned, and we shall spoil the very first issue in order to set up the premise. So anyone who doesn't want to be spoiled, stop now, read it, and then listen to the rest of this podcast, because it's really good.
No, I just listen and then read it afterwards.
So we have a character who is doing a pilot run of this interesting sort of symbiotic full body liquid
flight suit
armor thing. And the big twist in the first issue is that her government handlers want to test out the limits of it and are willing to kill her to do so. And so they basically blow her up and just to see what happens. And what they don't anticipate is that the little blobs of armor goo are going to splatter all over the neighborhood. And fall on this one completely unrelated woman who just happens to be out taking pictures that moment.
Photographer.
Yes.
But isn't she also, like, behind, you know, some top secret? Like, she's not supposed to be there.
Who?
The photographer one.
No, not at all. She's just there.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
They haven't revealed anything.
Yeah,
she's
just
there.
Public land, which
I
is why
she was,
the state park guy, I think, is involved.
Okay.
No.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, she was in a forest reserve, but it was actually a desert reserve or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Taking pictures of nature, and that's where Annie, who's the woman wearing the suit, she knows she's trying to fly as far away from like any inhabited land that she can, because she knows there's going to be a nuclear explosion, and she doesn't want, you know, she wants to minimize the amount of people getting hurt.
Yes.
Right, when she catches on that she's in danger.
Apparently the suit is atomic in some way. So,
as are we all.
So all of this, these little mercury balls fall on her and stick to her and can't be removed.
Yep.
And
she has no idea what the fuck just happened.
And she takes it rather well, I might add.
Yeah.
She doesn't seem overly distraught over it at first.
At first, yeah.
So,
of course, as soon as the government bad guys figure out what's happened, they start coming after her. And that's what sets up this sort of genre thing of, you know, bad guys after her. She doesn't know why. She's has these new kind of powers. She doesn't know why. Because only parts of the armor fell on her. Only her breasts are covered by this armor rather than her whole body. Like
they were just little dots, but then after a while they kind of coalesced into one kind of armor-like outfit. And from the covers and previews that you've seen, it looks like eventually it'll cover her whole body.
It's been expanding on her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but it hasn't happened
yet. It starts as sort of like just a little bit covering her shoulder blades, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then
well, it joins with the stuff in her car that fell under her vehicle.
Because a lot of it had fallen onto her truck, and as soon as she touched the truck, it all, like, jumps onto her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of she finds out early on that it can't be removed, and people who try to remove it, it has ability to harm them, to shock them, or whatever.
Right. Anyone who intends her harm.
Yes.
It can basically send out a zap of energy and hurt them.
Although friendly people can touch her all she wants.
Mm-hmm. Come in, because
your sister was the one that found that out.
If you know what I mean.
Okay, that was wrong.
Yes. But there's a love interest, a guy who works at this forest preserve.
They're not in love yet.
Well,
he still wants his other.
Yeah, I mean, he is the ex of, or is he with her?
He is the girlfriend of the boyfriend. The boyfriend of the woman who died in the, who was wearing the suit.
Right.
It's called the beta suit, by the way. Oh, hang on, that was not like my instructions. You guys continue.
Okay. Well, so the other power that we find out this suit is giving her is the ability to communicate in some way to some remnant of Annie's personality, which has been retained.
Yeah.
Well, let's listen in, see what's going on.
In issue 9 that I just read, the dream sequence at the beginning is very interesting with the devils.
Oh, yeah.
And she's naked and she's flying. And it's, you know, a callback to the first issue where the missiles are chasing Annie, and now in the dream, these devils are chasing Julie through the sky.
So, Mr. Freud, interpret that for us.
Well, and then there's the other dream that Pam has at the end.
Of this issue?
Issue 9. It starts and ends in a dream.
Yes.
So Pam is the one chasing her, right?
No, Pam's
her
sister.
Oh, sorry.
Pam is a sister. The one with post-traumatic stress syndrome, who I think is one of the more interesting characters in here.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was going to introduce her, actually, because we didn't. So the other main character, I mean, because we really get a lot
several
from her
characters,
perspective, is this woman who is working for the company chasing her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a...
She's investigating her disappearance and trying to track her down.
She's like a profiler.
She's like Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Yeah, she's kind of a mercenary.
Right, I mean, she's part detective, part assassin, though. I mean, she's clearly dangerous.
She wins my vote for most interesting character in the series.
I agree. And I think the most interesting thing about her is the first way you're introduced to her is... as she's caring for her young daughter. You know, and then she has all of these different facets that...
Yeah.
I mean, we don't usually get those kind of layers in Random Bad Guy.
Yeah, totally.
She seems to be a very loving mother, and she's also, bounty hunter, tracker, detective, assassin.
Badass.
Ooh, our food has arrived. I think we're going to pause this conversation.
Did you pause?
No.
Oh, we weren't.
We're back!
Hi! Did you miss us?
We're full of sushi.
Sushi.
And cooked things as well.
And cooked things.
After much dinner drama.
Yes.
We have emerged.
So where were we?
Victorious.
Victorious. I almost said prevalious, but I knew that wasn't a real word.
Prevalious?
So right after we paused, before Mike said he had a question...
I did?
Was it about how you pronounce words?
Remember
the question. Something that you found puzzling?
Oh, that was after I paused. I said that.
Yes.
Okay. I want to see if someone else noticed the most perplexing thing about the comic that I have found perplexing.
Wait, did you find it perplexing?
Perplexing?
Yes.
Perpuxling?
Can anybody guess what it was?
What was in her box? Closet?
No.
Thank you for appending that with in her closet.
I did not give much thought to what is in her box.
Is it covered in metal?
Although,
that's the real question.
Although you're very close with the word box. Can anyone notice anything about the word balloons?
Yes, I did. That all the women have round word balloons and all the men have square word balloons.
Yeah.
Really?
I never noticed that.
Except for one panel. I know, I think he did it by accident.
Susie, did you?
No, I didn't notice that.
Yep.
Visual aid, please.
I will have to go back and look and see if the early ones were like that, but...
Conversation. Ah. Yep. No, this one's number 2, so yes.
Huh.
And it's like that throughout the series.
Yep.
Well, he doesn't have a balloon at all.
Well, yeah, sometimes they don't have a balloon.
He's yelling.
Oh, wait, there's a chick with the box one. Or is it?
Is it just her versus everyone else?
No,
no,
it's
all women have round word balloons and all guys have square ones.
Yeah. Turn the page. There's more. All the men on that page, only men have square word balloons.
Crazy,
I'm like, what's the meaning of this? Is there a reason for this?
It could just be a stylistic choice on his part.
Well, when real people speak, you can usually tell whether they're a man or a woman. Maybe he's just visually indicating.
The first thing I thought is maybe he's kind of just in layouts. Maybe he's doing word balloons before the art, so I can tell where the characters should be lined up or something. What? Oh, bra shot. Yes, very nice.
Yes, very nice.
Sorry, Brandon,
Marty and
Florence
are having a moment.
Boobs.
Boobs.
It was more crotch panties, actually.
Oh, okay.
Panties.
More talk of her box. So what is in her box? What do you think? In her closet.
Does it tell?
There's reference made to, like, when she's arguing with her husband, and then later when the woman, Ivy, is going through her house, like, her husband mentions something, something suspicious and shameful that she uses that's in a box in her closet. And then Ivy finds a box in her closet and is like, oh, well, that's way more interesting.
Well, I had forgotten about Ivy's daughter, and when you brought it up earlier, I was very surprised because I was getting this feeling that she was falling in love with this person she was chasing.
Mm.
Well, there is that whole, like, smelling the pillows.
Yes.
Thing. That smelling the dirty pillows. Dirty pillows.
Yeah.
I was not getting the love vibe, but I mean, her having a daughter is not...
No, certainly not. Theory. No, but I was just surprised when, because I had forgotten completely about the daughter. But yeah, it definitely got a kind of a lesbianic overtone from.
Lesbianic.
I'm all about creating words today. I'm making my own urban dictionary.
There's part of me that almost doesn't want Ivy to soften up because I think that. She's such an interesting character, having the daughter and yet being this total badass on the job, that if she kind of betrays the job and...
Well, I think she's definitely growing to like Julian.
Yeah.
I don't know, but yeah, who knows if it's a love thing, but I think, you know, she probably... It generally doesn't have cause to like the people she's chasing. And, you know, she's kind of learned who Julian is. She's just this bystander, got thrown into this shitty situation. I don't know.
Are you guys seeing any parallels in this and Terry Moore's other works?
Definitely not Runaways. Even though they had an advertisement for it.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah,
they did.
There's some lesbianic overtones in Runaways.
It's because there's lesbians in Runaways.
Yeah.
Lesbians and Strangers in Paradise.
Yes.
Of course, that preceded Terry Moore's involvement in Runaways.
I haven't read any other Terry Moore besides Runaways and Echo now.
Oh,
well, I have it all.
The
didn't he write like and Terry is a boy, right?
Yes.
Okay, make sure. Didn't he write like a Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane?
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He wrote a short arc.
How was that?
Yeah.
It was okay. I mean, it did completely fit into the series, at least the parts of it I've read so far.
Yeah. I mean, that series certainly is not up my alley.
Yeah. It was good.
Well, here's a question. Echo and Strangers in Paradise are all about grown men and women. Grown women, especially.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Runaways and Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane are definitely about a younger generation.
Yeah.
How do you think he... I'm thinking that he doesn't seem as comfortable writing for the kids.
Well, I don't know if it's writing for kids. I think Marvel brought him in because they wanted to... Those are two comics that they targeted at women. And I think that's what Terry Moore appeals to. I think that's
targeted at women. I think Runaways just happens to have a stronger audience than a lot of their other stuff.
No, there was a definite concentrated effort to get Runaways into a female market. Women or teenage girls? A little bit of both. Part of it was when they produced the trades, they did it in digest form because, you know,
so
manga comics.
That for, like, for young adults who are into manga, not necessarily to girls.
Except teenage girls are more apt to be into manga than other comics.
That is my understanding, actually, is that manga is supposed to be the way into the girl market.
And that's what they were trying to do with Runaways.
It's a young adult title, and so the young adult titles went into the sort of the manga. Because the Marvel Adventures stuff, they also go into the manga format.
Yeah, and those are definitely not aimed at the teenage girls.
Not necessarily, no. But I do remember reading kind of a plan on Runaways long before they brought Terry Moore in, that they wanted to appeal to a more female audience. And I think Terry Moore was an extension to that, because Strangers in Paradise definitely had a female audience, or female fan base.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even though that and Echo are vastly different from Runaways or Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane.
Right. I mean, I would say that, you know, where he was least successful was Runaways.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be because it was in a younger voice. It also could be because it was in someone else's voice entirely,
mm-hmm.
you know, whereas the things that he excels in are entirely his vision.
Yeah.
And I'd say if Spider-Man loves Mary Jane, I don't know that it counts in either category. I mean, it wasn't like a breakout success, but it wasn't painfully bad. But I also think the bar set awfully low, you know, and it's a very caricature kind of voice. It's not trying to be genuine. It's not trying
yeah.
to, you know, speak to your generation. It's just telling these very light little stories but in a very kind of systematic way.
I'm curious if Terry Moore was expected to last longer on Runaways than he did, or if he was just slated to do those issues that he did.
I really don't know.
What issue did he end with, do you know?
Well,
he did like a 6-issue arc.
Yeah.
Okay, because I got the 2 trades recently from the library of one between the 2 trades, it was 1 through 10, and they
relaunched when Joss Whedon came on, didn't they?
No. This is the most recent 1 through 10 that started with Terry Moore.
They
relaunched
Joss
again.
Ended, they relaunched. Okay.
Yep, because they're kind of doing it almost in as
seasons. Yeah.
And the Terry Moore season started with issue number 1, and the first trade was completely him. The second trade, it had him credited. But then it also had some other writers, like Christopher Yost.
Yeah, and they were only on for 1 issue.
But it didn't
so
really
I think
say...
I think Terry Moore might have done
right
8 issues.
What's that, Susie?
There's a new team on it right now. And
yeah.
This is all very recent. I'm surprised it like went into trade that immediately.
Oh,
well,
Marvel is...
out pretty quick.
Like, you'll have 6 issues of a comic that comes out, and when the 7th issue is on the stands, the trade of the first 6 will
it's
be on the stands
not
next
that
to it.
Quick.
I've seen that a lot more lately. A lot more. They're really rushing the trades out.
Yeah.
Because they're
DC's
making
the
more
thing.
Money off
yeah.
of them.
You should buy more trades. Yeah. I feel like there are a bunch of things we're buying in single issue that I'm not enjoying in single issue format, that I would rather read them aggregate.
That's how comics are being written these days.
I am enjoying the new direction that Runaways is taking
mm-hmm.
over.
Yeah, I like this new writer. It just seems to really feel like the characters. On the other hand, the artist, I really don't like at all.
Umberto Ramos?
They haven't had a decent artist since Adrian Alfonso or something like that. I can't remember his name.
Alfonso Rivera?
Maybe. No.
He couldn't draw well, but he was a heck of a dancer.
What did you say, Susie? I didn't hear that.
Oh, I was just saying Alfonso Rivera is an artist in his own way.
The last issue of that second trade was issue number 10, the one that was a tie-in to the Manifest Destiny storyline, where it had Molly's a little
Molly,
girl?
Yeah,
Molly
and Wolverine.
And I like that. It was cute.
Really?
That's not even to say the people are doing it now.
Okay.
Yeah. The person who's writing it right now, unfortunately, I don't remember their name, really does seem to have a handle on the characters and how they speak and how they think and how they act. Unfortunately, the artist is just the characters, like we were talking before, they look very generic. They all seem to have the same faces. They all seem to have the same enormous, you know, boobs, except for Molly and Clara, who are pre-adolescent.
Well, good that they're not giving them boobs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't like the way they draw Clara.
Even, you know, you've got Nico, who's Asian. She doesn't look Asian at all.
Yeah.
She just looks goth and with a big chest. And then
This is not the artist who was doing it Japanese style.
Correct.
Yeah.
And not before that, it was Umberto Ramos, who has the very cartoony style.
I've never liked him.
Yeah,
oh yeah, I hated the cartoony.
And I really just, I don't like the art at all. And also their faces, like they all have red noses and cheeks, so they look drunk. it's just, yeah, I don't, you know, I hate to bash people, but I really don't like this artist.
Well,
but I really like the rounder. And so it's kind of, you know,
art is personal, you know. I mean, you know, I've gotten a lot more used to cartoony styles of art. I still am not a fan of Umberto Ramos, particularly because I think his stuff is too busy and too hard to follow. But I've really developed a liking for Scotty Young.
But they're completely different styles.
Well, they're both the stretchy cartoon bodies.
Who's Scotty Young? What does he do?
Wonderful Wizard of Oz was the most recent stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And
that
he was doing...
I agree. I like that.
Yeah.
He was doing...
New X-Men.
When it the kids. And it was ending.
When it was New Mutants.
Yeah, New Mutants. New X-Men. His Anoli is great.
Well, speaking of art and going back to
Echo.
Echo, in a little bit of a segue. I mentioned before that I really like the crisp, clean lines of Echo, but I was reminded again a few minutes ago when I was paging through that when they have a bloody scene, it's pretty jarring that it's so different from everything else that you see on these very clean but somewhat kind of empty panels that you can have this busy, bloody scene.
It's almost
pretty
like
graphic.
Tuned into a Cronenberg film.
Read that just after, I think I read Black Summer or something like that. Uh-huh. It kind of reminded me of that. The completely different art styles, but the concept of the, you know, the bodies that are just completely mutilated.
Yeah.
Now,
in a very specific way.
Oh, I hate the artist in Black Summer.
Yeah, I like Terry Moore as an artist better than that. It felt connected to me. One other thing.
Yeah, sure.
I thought the layout of that, of the thing I think we were referring to, is one of a scene where a body is found that has been mutilated. It's all spread out and stretched.
Yeah.
And
well, there's that and the battle between the bikers and the dude.
But the way the lid of the page had been laid out for that particular scene, I'm thinking it was really interesting, and what a way that the Terry Moore sort of does this, and other artists that I've been reading just don't. It's very graphically interesting because it's frames in the page, like rectangles inside rectangles, and in the interior of the rectangles you get the picture sort of flowing into it. I can't describe it very well, but I thought...
Do you know what issue you're referring to?
It would have been like 4 or 5.
I think I know what you're talking about. I just saw in an issue that we were paging through here where you have the frame of the panel, and inside that a person will be standing inside a doorway. Or there will be some other...
That's Lemon. This is more...
I just found...
Because it's not, you know, it's clearly not how you would see
the
page. It's just, in its own way, it's a splash page because you get one big picture.
I just found it, and I remember looking at that, thinking that it was a little bit out of place when I saw it as well.
Interesting. Reading it, though, I thought it was just very interesting.
It's a drawing your focus into the middle, and... Well, I mean, the person has been exploded, and in this way, the panel has been exploded as well.
Mm.
Really? I just kind of see it almost zeroing in on the center instead of
exploding
out.
A combination of both.
It's both zeroing in and exploding outward.
It is not in its original whole state.
It's the comic book equivalent of the
shock thing.
Yeah, exactly.
The camera zooming in while panning back.
But it also is almost like a treat for your eye. This is not something you would see in any other medium.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps it from getting very monotonous, where it's just, three panels, next page, two panels, next page, two panels, big panel,
Yeah. He really does customize his layout for depending on what he's trying to show at each page.
I do gotta say the one scene I didn't like artistically was the scene where Ivy was flying the plane through the storm. I thought that was a little busy and unnecessary. Let's see if I can find it.
It did kind of almost seem like I noticed that as well. That why is she flying through a storm? It didn't affect her flying of the plane. It didn't have anything to do with it. It's almost like Terry decided, I don't want to draw a storm around her plane.
Well, it's not a greatly drawn storm. It's all these scribbles, almost.
I actually have to agree with that, yeah. I think the rain itself in other pages is depicted really well.
Yeah.
But there's two panels where it does look not very convincing.
It makes me wonder a little bit, because all of the panels are very intrinsic and beautiful. And this one, it's like he didn't really know how to draw storm clouds, and so that's the best he could do.
Yeah.
It could have been a time issue. Just felt like just the plane and the sky would have been...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a terrible panel in itself, but it doesn't fit with everything else he's drawn.
Yeah, it is not the same caliber.
Okay, yeah, I don't remember this at all, so I can't...
It's in issue 7, and just opened right to the middle of the book.
I actually don't have it in front of me.
What?
Unprepared. There's another panel.
Yeah.
What can we say? We haven't read the whole thing.
Well, we weren't supposed to read the whole thing. It wasn't about the whole series.
Well, because, the issue 14 didn't bring it to any kind of close of an arc. It's just as in progress as it is stopping where you stop. So do you guys have any guesses or visions for where you think it's going?
Well, I think that Ivy is for sure, as much as you hope she doesn't betray the agency, she's turning it. You can already tell she's...
No, it's true. It's clear. And it's not that I don't think she should, given her character that seems to fit. I just kind of like that initial contrast.
Sure. I'm not wondering really badly at where it's going, because... I don't know, it still seems a little bit kind of like the a Hulk-like series where, it's Bruce Banner on the road.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next adventure they hit? But I don't know. I have no idea.
Does anyone know if this is supposed to be a finite series or if it's...
No, I don't know.
Another one that, you could do for years?
I don't really know.
Well,
I was going to say, some things that they've sort of touched on that haven't really gone anywhere yet is his sister.
Oh, I think they touched on it a bit.
Well, no, but I mean, Pam also seems to have some kind of
rapport,
psychic connection to her.
Yeah.
And
do you think that existed already, or did it happen when she touched
the
liquid?
I can't tell, but she's already had certain prophetic dreams about her. And did we mention what happened to Pam while I was away?
No.
So Pam is her sister, and some tragedy has happened to her before the series started.
She lost her children.
She had a husband and two children, and now the husband and two children are gone, and Pam has lost her mind, basically. And it seems pretty much implied that at least the children, I don't know about the husband, are dead.
Right.
Well, I noticed...
Pam is in an institution...
The parallel in issue 9, it starts with a dream and ends with a dream. It starts with Julie's dream, which
was a callback to the first issue with Annie's flight, and then it ends with Pam's dream, which was very reminiscent of Terminator 2 and the nuclear nightmare scene.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We also, also about her children's dying, you find out at some point that basically the catalyst for the her marriage falling apart was her losing her family. Yeah, Julie's.
Mm.
Rick yells at her like, you lost your family and you never recovered from it or something.
Huh. I missed
right,
that, actually.
That was in issue 3.
Well, he says, you know, you've just changed. And she says, well, like, I lost
it.
My entire family in the course of a year. And it seems to imply that it's more than just, you know.
Niece and nephew.
Well, I think it might be niece and nephew,
yeah.
And then her sister's institutionalized.
True, yeah.
And then her marriage falls apart.
Okay. That's true. I just was wondering if it was more that than her parents, if there was the, yeah, I don't know.
Maybe her parents, too. Who knows?
Well, maybe her sister's family was all she had left of family, and so.
Well, so, in the issue 3, I don't know if this is what you just said, Mike, but Pam says she sees Julie in her dreams. She says, Julie in the sky with diamonds flying over the mushrooms.
Oh, we weren't talking about that. Yeah. So, Pam having the dreams apparently happened before she touched the stuff. Because she hadn't seen it at that point.
No, she did actually touch it.
Oh, she did. But apparently she had the dreams
before. But just like seconds,
it.
Yeah, seconds before.
If she was referring to dreams that she had had of Julie flying
mm-hmm.
in the sky.
Right.
But, I mean, did the
and then she even goes.
When the accident happened and Julie got the thing, or is this something inherent in Pam? We don't know.
Right.
Yeah. And then, so, I mean, then Julie says, I can't fly, Pam. And she says, yes, Julie, you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then she gets all kind of a
prophecy like. Although Annie, the flight suit was dead, the thing that she was wearing that ended up on Julie didn't allow her to fly. It allowed her to fly and survive while she had a jetpack on her back. It was a jetpack that let her fly.
No, because she threw the jetpack at the bomb before it exploded.
Did she?
She got hit.
Right. I mean, I think that
she
just exploded. And maybe. I thought she threw the jetpack,
too. She tore the helmet off, and then she threw that, I think.
But, yeah, no, I didn't think the suit let her, like,
has
the
ability totally
to fly on its own. But one other thing I noticed on rereading, like, there's at the very, like, in the very first issue, there's, like, you know, sketches, and one of them is labeled, you know, like, the suit is the layout of the suit, and it's labeled Alpha and Beta suits. And there hasn't been any discussion that there's another one out there. That, you know, another complete suit out there.
Mm.
But maybe there is.
Mm.
Yeah.
So Beta is the second.
Where do you think the title comes from? Echo. What does that have to do?
Something I don't know if we've discussed yet, but that she's remembering Annie's memories.
Mm.
And I think
that had to do with the dreams
with
going on.
Well, and she seems to be picking up on other things as well. That the suit has some sort of psychic ability a little bit, or the...
Well, there's a... Ivy has her toothbrush analyzed from at the motel, and it says that she has 2 sets of DNA.
What? I don't remember that.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that might have been after 9.
Oh, maybe. Sorry.
Oh, wow.
That's...
Yeah,
wow.
It comes back that... Should they have her toothbrush analyzed from before she got from like her house from before it happened, and then from the motel after the first one? You know, it's her DNA. It says she has certain, you know, indicators for being from cancer, and the one from the motel, she's completely healthy. It's all gone. She's exactly the same person. It's all gone, but all the indicators are gone, and she has 2 sets of DNA.
Right, which actually. Does set up Ivy's motivation going forward. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because her daughter...
Well, should we reveal to you?
That's fine.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Or we can just start wrapping up and...
No, tell us. Do it. Ruin it. Come on. Let's go.
No, forget it.
You have to read it yourself.
It means you guys got to get number 10.
Yeah. We're working on it. We put
it
in
your order. You can lend me numbers 11 through whatever, and I'll find number 10.
Nope, can't enter 10 first.
We're also being, you know, let in a little more onto who Annie was and her purpose behind developing this technology as opposed to the company that she was working for's purpose.
When you see the company's name, how do you hear it in your head?
Oh, I don't remember. Henry.
What?
Yeah, Henry.
Just Henry.
Okay.
Think Henri?
I do. I look at it and I think Henri.
That's because of the way it's capitalized.
I'm sure it is. And the I at the end instead of a Y.
Henri.
Henri. Henri.
Ornery.
But they make American
Annie's,
weapons. It
Annie's,
can't be a French company.
Annie's purpose was a plot device to bring Julie and Dylan together. That's all she's for.
I'd get together with Dylan.
He seems very sweet.
Yes.
He's so dreamy.
Although I bet you he is a good angry play. When he got angry a few times in there, it was like, okay, I can see it.
And he rides a motorcycle well.
Did we discuss on, like, Dylan's role at all?
Huh?
Did we discuss Dylan's role at all?
No, not really.
Okay, he is both the park ranger for the place where the explosion happened, which is called Moonlight. And he is also Annie's, I think, fiancé. And he knows about the explosion, but he doesn't know she's involved with it. But he hasn't heard from her for a few days. And he goes to where she works to just be like, try to figure out where she's been. And then they inform him that she's dead, and they won't say anything else, or, you know, what happened to the body, or, you know, how she died, or anything else.
They're not very good at subterfuge, are they?
I was going to say that, yeah, I don't know what part of that they thought would make a fiancé just walk away like, she just died at work.
Top secret.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, you can't tell me.
She died on the job. We're very sorry. Goodbye.
Yeah, you make up something like she had bad sushi.
Well,
there's,
I mean, at the very least,
something.
Industrial accident.
She
she's been reassigned to the bottom of the ocean.
She has no idea where she is. She hasn't been here for days, you know. And then, you know, maybe she just left him and had a little breakdown or something. Who knows?
She's
yeah.
in a secret compartment. It's located 6 feet under.
Yeah, they're clearly not trying very hard. They're feeling very much above any kind of consequence.
Well, it's true. They do have this attitude. I mean, clearly, when they blew up Annie in the first issue, they feel untouchable.
Yeah. Yes, so we mentioned the bad guys are assholes?
Well, there's another bad guy, too.
Ah, true.
The evil, raving lunatic guy.
Yeah, raving lunatic homeless guy was also just around the area when the explosion happened. He ended up with some of the suit as well.
Right, a smaller amount that was mostly on his hand.
Yeah, but he seems to have more control over it than she does.
Well, he seems to have more willingness to use it for violence than she does.
Yeah, but do you think that tells a little bit about the nature of the suit, that he can use it for violence much more easily than she can in any other way?
Well, the way I think of it is his focus. Like, his focus is so much more pinpointed on his crazy. You know, whereas hers is, like, she's scattered, trying to take care of herself, trying to figure out what's going on. You know, she's not really putting a lot of energy into how to use it.
But
part of his delusions is that he's, like, chosen of God, possibly is God. And that this power is the wrath of God.
I'm just wondering if there's something to the fact that obviously this place created this to be an agent of violence, weapon of violence. If there's something to do with that, that the way it reacts in violent nature when Julie, you know, without Julie's control, and how easily he can control it to act in a violent way.
Well, think of it this way. Where is his armor and where is hers?
On his hand.
Ah, hers is over her heart.
That
does
seem
intentional.
Yeah, that does seem symbolic.
Possibly.
Now that you mention it, yeah.
But I do think there's something to it that it's a violent weapon.
Mm-hmm.
That it's meant to be violent. And I think that would be a very interesting, you know, conflict in the story if she's struggling with this thing that wants to do violence.
Well, I think it seems to have sort of a dual nature to it, just because the primary person working on it, Annie, had different motivations, but the people who are controlling through the whole development had, sort of cross purposes. So it's
Make
of it.
It's certainly capable of more than violence, depending on the intent.
What does phi represent?
Who?
The Greek letter phi.
I don't know.
The symbol that's on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they refer to it a couple of times in the story. And I'm wondering what it actually, what it represents.
Well, fraternities. So long. It cannot.
What letter is it in the alphabet? If it's
which letter? I don't know.
Alpha, beta, gamma. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta, tha.
It's somewhere in there.
phi, chi, psi, omega. It's it's near the end.
It's the echo of the beginning of it.
It's like W.
I don't know. It can represent a lot of different things.
Well, usually Greek letters tend to. The golden ratio.
Oh, they're distracted by Wikipedia. Sorry. For those listening at home who have no idea why you just stopped mid-sentence.
The reason we're discussing phi is because the suit, even though, it formed onto Julie's skin and conformed to it, and it looks just like this sheet of metal, except for right in the very center, right between her boobs, basically, or just above them, is the letter, Greek letter phi. Which I didn't recognize until they said that it's the Greek letter phi.
I think it's just because Terry Moore has a thing for boobs and wanted to draw more in that area.
Well, so looking at the Annie's original suit, she had it as well.
Yeah.
In the same location.
So, are we about wrapped up, do you think?
Yeah, I'm ready for sleepy time.
Yeah.
Comes as a shock to all regular listeners.
Well, thanks for listening. Whose turn is it next to pick?
Question.
It was Florence's pick. Doesn't Susie go next, or?
But I went just before this.
Oh, okay. Then is
it's my turn.
Jason.
Oh, is it?
I think it is. You went first,
yeah,
then Marty,
first
then
the
me.
Full circle, because I used to be the last.
Yeah.
Oh,
Jason, your pick.
Yep.
What's it going to be? Quick. 30 seconds.
I don't know. I'll think of something within the week.
Uncle Scrooge.
I'll think of something.
Power Pack.
It'll be something that's really hard to find and, something very obscure. It'll be asterisks in French. No.
Asterisks in Oblix.
I don't know. I'll think of something.
The Little Prince. Okay.
All right.
Thanks for listening. Join
yes.
us next time. Same echo time, same echo channel.
Channel.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.